Hello and welcome to the A440 Podcast, the one music podcast everyone can get in tune with. I'm your host, Charles Fiore, and later today we'll be talking with Cristina Velez Justo, aka Trinity, a composer for film score and media based in Charlotte, North Carolina. For a long time, my cell phone ringtone was the theme song to The Good, Bad, and the Ugly, that Sergio Leone Western starring Clint Eastwood and Lee Van Cleef. I sort of liked the way the theme song had that sound of the lonesome West, also carried a bit of mystery, perhaps a bit of danger. If people recognized it in public, of course, everybody got a good chuckle out of it. But cell phone ringtones are just one way that some film scores have transcended their original medium and become part of our vernacular. For example, who of us hasn't reached the top of a tall flight of stairs, sort of jogged in place and pumped our arms in the air and sang the theme song to Rocky? Or the way in everyday conversation, if we want to imply danger, maybe we hum the theme song to Jaws. Da-da, ba-da, 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 right? That minor second. It's a way of communicating with one another, not with words, but with another language entirely. Film scores are all around us. They've become part of our national conversation, if not our global conversation. And yet, the people who write those scores are often overlooked. Just how much does a composer add to our movie-going experience? What about video games? What about cell phone rings? What about all the media we consume day in and day out? So now I'd like to welcome Cristina Velez Justo, a.k.a. Trinity, a composer for film and media based in Charlotte, North Carolina. Trinity, thanks so much for hanging out on the A440 Podcast.
Well, thank you very much for the invitation. I appreciate it.
For sure. Now, you compose scores for films and video games, which means you compose the music that goes along with what we're watching on the screen. Right. So can you talk a little bit about that process? Like initially, how does a film or a project come to you?
All right. So to give you the quick version, basically what I do is I get involved in the film from the get-go. So when it's in pre-production, so starting with the script, I like to read the script, talk to the filmmakers, the key crew on what is the themes of the film. So basically themes of the story, what are the messages they're trying to come across, who are the characters, how are they developing, et cetera, et cetera. And based off of that, then I kind of come up with a scope of instrumentation and possibly themes to follow certain characters or objects, places, things, et cetera. And after they start shooting, I may start coming up with some mock-ups. Basically, a mock-up is it's like a rough version using virtual instruments of a cue of music for the film. Or that may also be for commercials or television or video games, etc. And once it's in post-production, the film, then we get together, we discuss the rough cut. And we basically go through, we have something called a spotting session where we go through, we spot every point in the film that requires music. And once we're all on the same page, we break. And then I write music, delivering cues as they're finished and waiting for approval, et cetera. And once everything is approved, I mix, I master, I deliver, and done.
So. That's great. I guess I didn't realize just how closely composer worked with the director. You're really working hand in hand. Yeah.
Right. It usually depends. I mean, sometimes the director is involved. Sometimes it's just the producer. It really depends on what the production is like. What's really funny though is working with actors, because you see them as your scoring the film over and over and over, and it comes to a point where you actually know their lines better than they do.
Sure.
So once the film is finished and everyone comes together, whether there's like a wrap party or at a premiere or whatever it is, it's great. Because then I'm like, hey, I know you. You're the actor for this, that, and the other. Me speaking as composer. And they're just like, who are you? They never see the composer. Most people do not see the composer at all. But I mostly just work with director, producer, sometimes editor, if we're working with other special effects, sound effects, things that need to be added to the picture lock that I'm working with. Picture lock basically meaning that the editing, the cutting of the film is done, but that doesn't necessarily mean color correction, audio spiffing, and all that stuff.
You have some advice for filmmakers, don't you, about how to the best way to work with the composer?
Every filmmaker is different, of course. Every creative is different. But something that I have witnessed, especially in places outside of LA and even in LA too, like LA, New York, you know, the powerhouses of media, filmmakers are not as familiar with the music making process, and they are also not as aware as how important music can be for the film. So it's not just, music is not just there to emotionally support what's going on in the scene. So for example, if you want to throw some aleatoric effects for a horror film, okay, that sounds very creepy, it's bringing on tension, etc. But when you have a thematic score, so a score that revolves around themes, you have an element in the score that allows you to tell the story or help to tell the story. You can bring attention to a specific detail of the film. So whether that might be a person, so a character, a place, an event, an emotion, or an object. And with the use of themes, you're basically creating an avenue for your viewers to develop a sense of familiarity, psychologically speaking, with these objects or components in your story. So as these themes continue to develop throughout the film, your viewer is connecting to them so that by the end of the film, they have developed this, well, this sense of connection, this sense of understanding that a score that does not have themes can deliver. For example, John Williams, right? He's a prolific film composer, okay? And it's because he knows how to utilize themes and he knows how to develop them and he knows how to attach these phrases of music or instruments to specific focuses in the film. Let's say in Indiana Jones, okay, everybody knows Indiana Jones. Everybody's seen, well, hopefully everybody.
Good Lord, I hope so.
You never know with these newer generations, but it is what it is. Anyway, so with Indiana Jones, okay, you have, there's this one scene in particular that I like to share with filmmakers to help them understand just how important thematic music writing is, or rather thematic scoring is. And there is a part of, it's when Indiana Jones is thinking, I think he's either on the balcony or, yes, that's right. He is on the balcony with Saul or Sala, his Egyptian friend. And Indiana Jones is just sitting there thinking, okay, there's really not much dialogue going on, but you know exactly what he's thinking about because John Williams had established the themes to these particular components of the film or focuses in the film early on or throughout the film to this point. In the beginning, you hear Marion's theme, also known as the love theme. It goes, ba-dum, ba-da-da-dum, ba-dum. And everybody knows that, you know, and that's even included in the Raiders of the Lost Ark main title sequence. Okay. And then as his thought changes, realizes, okay, so Marion had just been kidnapped. He has this affection for her, but then realizes what he's here for. And you start to hear the Lost Ark theme. Ba-da-dum, 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 ba-dum, right? So everybody knows those themes because they had been established. Now, it's not only helping to tell the story, but it's also developing a brand for your film, right? You are now taking something with you. The viewer is taking something with them that every single time they listen to these themes, they will see the film in their minds. My other bit of advice for filmmakers is, sure, you can use stock music, canned music, or just emotionally supportive music, which can be stock or custom, but there's just so much more with getting something through a thematic score. Now, unfortunately, in today's film scores, it's hard to find a successful thematic score. And what I mean by successful is that it has to hit 4 points. It has to succeed in 4 ways.
Okay.
One, that the score successfully supports the image. So when you're watching the film, the music is helps to support what's going on in the image, whether it's storytelling, emotionally, etc. Two, that on its own, it successfully acts as a complete piece of music. Three, that when you're listening to the film, when you are listening to the score, it allows you to recall what's happening in the film at that given moment. And four, that on your own, you can recall the score and therefore remember the film.
Okay, absolutely.
So this is what I'd like to advise filmmakers to think about when they're trying to find a composer or they're trying to find a score or trying to find music for their film. That I get it, you know, with cost and with time and all these other idiosyncrasies that come with having to find or having to finish a product. When you want to take your film to the next level, you have to think of taking your score to the next level as well. It's not just there to just fill your ears while there's something going on in the screen. It's to help tell the story.
And when you think of some of these iconic film scores, something like Jaws, right, where it's that da-da-da-da, right? I mean, everyone knows mm-hmm. that, you know, and it's sort of, and that has sort of transcended culture, right? I mean, people use that just in like daily conversation when they're trying to be, you know, make a joke or be threatening, you know? So a good a good film score becomes kind of part of our, you know, like cultural narrative,
right.
Really.
Right, right. It becomes part of the vernacular language, you know, everybody...
Yes.
Everybody uses it. I mean, that's the great thing about music, right? It's a universal language. But again, it's like, that's how you know that that score was successful in telling the story, but also in creating a precedence for successful film scores, you know, in the future. Because it's not just, you don't just develop a story, you don't just develop a character, but you can also use the score for other elements to surprise the viewers, or even to foreshadow what might be happening in the story.
Absolutely.
Like for example, like with Jaws. I mean, you know that the shark is coming when you start to hear that, you know, half tone motif, right?
Yes.
Or half step. So.
I'm thinking of your animated short. You scored an animated short called Splash. You know. And in this mm-hmm. in this animated short, there's a fisherman toy in a bathtub, and he's trying to rescue another toy from the drain as the water is going down. And he turns around to sort of take in the dilemma, and there's this giant funnel of water going down the drain. And at that moment, your score offers up this amazing choral response. You know, it adds all these vocals on top of it, and it's both a little bit humorous, but also very dramatic, right? It's sort of we sort of see all the elements of that short kind of come together, the conflict, his desires, his goals, and all that. So super effective, you know. And it's a cartoon,
right.
You know. And still, I'm somehow moved by this the score for it.
Right. Well, actually, and that's why I love animation. I mean, animation, you have to go that much further with the score. So what's interesting is that. With that score, I'm trying to develop a sense of reality, right? With the characters. So, in that spot where you see, I think it's Skip, Yes. So it's Skip and Pip.
Okay.
Those are the this is the characters. So Skip is the sailor, Pip is his dog.
Perfect.
And then you have Gargalore, which is the monster, right? And Gargalore had gotten Pip thrown off of the boat, and so now Skip is trying to rescue Pip. So
yes.
In context of what's going on in this rescue mission, I mean, I have to over dramatize it because imagine what Skip is feeling. Like, he sees this giant funnel in the quote-unquote bathtub ocean, right?
Yes.
And he needs to go rescue his little dog companion. What I really enjoy about scoring for animation is that, so sound in general is one of the most important components of filmmaking, commercial television, any form of media. You need to have great sound in order to develop a sense of reality for your viewers. Because scientifically speaking, we can see an image that may be completely distorted, but based off of our memory banks and experiences from when we were born, we have a way of putting together the shapes and the color tones and the lighting, et cetera, to make sense of this distorted image. However, we do not have that same luxury with audio. So sound must be clean in order, or not just clean, but dramatized to fit the story in order for us to completely make it our reality. So in order for us as a viewer to dive into this fictional world, we must have great sound, we must have great music, et cetera, et cetera. And so with animation, because it is animated, it is not a realistic medium. You know, these are things that have been conceptualized by the random creativity of these animators or visual artists or, you know, 3D modelers. We then only have sound and the music to make that real for us, to make people dive into that story. So with Splash and with other films that are animated, the reason why I love it is because, I mean, it's a little bit more pressure as a composer, but it's that much more of a challenge and much more of an adventure to really test, no pun intended, but test the waters of what you can really prove, what you can really engage in your viewer to step into that world. So
nice.
Like perfect example, that funnel, right? It's like, yeah, you know, it's just a drain, but for them, in order to feel the intensity of what they're going through, then I decided to add choir and the strings, and, you know, you have this heroic solo trumpet that represents Skip and a piccolo that represents Pip. So it's high energy, you know, and they work great together.
Different instruments have their own personalities, because you say a piccolo represented Pip, right? Or, I mean, do you think of instruments in terms of what they can offer as far as their help characterize the story at all? I mean, do different instruments?
Oh, definitely. I'll just rephrase it. Let's go back in time, okay, and think about the first quote unquote film music composer. Okay, we're going to go back to Wagner. Okay.
Okay.
In the 1800s, you have opera. Opera was, opera was much before, but Wagner, he really started to develop his scores for operas in order to help tell the story. Because actually, a lot of the time, these operas were in different languages than what the viewers would be able to understand. So he would have to use the score as a means to help tell the story so that the viewers can make sense of what's going on. This was their visual entertainment. This is why I call him one of the first, or if not the first, film music composer. He created something called the Leitmotif. And the Leitmotif is basically a phrase of music or an instrument that follows a person, place, thing, event, or emotion. Through his practices and through his performances, et cetera, or his pieces of music, then the official film music composers that started in the 1930s, and actually sooner, we have Camille Saint-Saëns. He ended up writing a film score for a French or Italian short film, and started using this idea of the leitmotif to help represent different characters or important themes within the story using phrases of music or melodies to follow these elements or instruments. So considering that I was trained to, or rather I was educated in these fields and learn more about Wagner and the first film composers, I had learned that there are ways to help develop a story or to follow a character or to represent these elements of the film using either a phrase of music or an instrument. And it's just by picking up patterns, these composers were using different instruments in order to get a specific emotion, right? Or to portray a specific idea. And so, and you can find that in film music most definitely, because these are the tools that we have.
Right.
I mean, in present day music or film music, you have a lot of sound design now, and electronic takes of, or electronic ways of composing scores. And so they create weird soundscapes or sound design or distorted effects that then follow these different entities, specific instruments that have different qualities. So like with piccolo, I think of fun and innocent and full of life. Of course, you can change it using different techniques, right? Like if you had an aggressive flutter tongue, that could, on a piccolo, that could be portrayed completely different as something that's either really annoying or something that's more frantic.
You were trained in alto and baritone saxophone. Now, did those instruments like help you become a composer? I mean, is that something that you found useful, those instruments specifically?
Yeah, so alto and bari sax were my first instruments. I would say that they have helped me in orchestrating and also understanding how to write music using virtual instruments, especially wind instruments, because I understand that one needs to breathe.
and, yes, one does.
you know, just, right? Yeah. But also it's just the application of how much breath you put through an instrument. And it's like the idea of legato versus staccato versus everything tongued, et cetera, et cetera. I've been able to apply that to my virtual instrument writing. So like something that not just filmmakers, but folks in general don't understand about film music composition, especially in today's world, is that it's not just I attach a keyboard and to my computer and I just go blip, 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 and plunk and be done, right?
What? Yeah.
There's a lot more. Yeah, right. There's a lot more audio engineering behind it. And so, and the manipulation of these virtual instruments in order to make them sound like they're being played by humans, right? So basically, yes, I do connect a giant keyboard to my to my computer, but
sure,
that's only for the reason of recording these instrumental lines and having them pull up as data in the computer. With this data, so let's say that I loaded a saxophone patch or a flute patch, okay? A flute virtual instrument, and using my keyboard, I'm able to record a flute line into my software. The thing is that in order for that flute to sound like it's being played by a human, I now have to manipulate that data to, one, have proper breathing between the phrases, two, the control of air going through the instrument. So are they this quote unquote virtual human, are they breathing more as they're ascending, or rather are they releasing more air forcefully as it's going up the scale, or are they running out of air by the end of this long sustain? Okay, how much vibrato am I putting onto these notes, et cetera, et cetera. So there's all these different parameters that I have to put into this data or into this track of flute in order to make it sound human. And I'm able to understand that more because I'm a wind player.
That's remarkable.
That answers your question very...
No, it does. And I mean, So as a composer, in a very real way, you don't, it's not only that you need to know how these instruments sound or how they'll sound in your score, but you need to know what the players are doing to actually manipulate the physical mechanisms that make these things make sound. I mean, I can imagine maybe adding
all the mechanics.
Mechanics of it, yeah. I can imagine adding squeaks, perhaps, to a guitar or violin, you know, like, and things like that. I mean, you really need to have a deep familiarity with all these instruments.
Yeah, and also how that each of these virtual instruments, because there are hundreds of libraries of virtual instruments, basically, or what we call them are sample libraries, because they are literally libraries of audio or wave files, audio files of recorded or quote unquote sampled instruments. So you sit down, so in these studios, they sit these players down and they say, all right, I need you to play every note in your range and play them at every single articulation that we want to put into this library. Staccato, pizzicato, you know, this is like just for a string, okay? We have staccato, pizzicato, staccato, anything like put portamento, legato, and like all these different things. So these libraries, depending on how high a quality they are, they can be very large. But again, it gives you more flexibility on how to control these quote unquote virtual instruments or samples in order to make them sound more realistic. Some of these libraries I find are absolutely extraordinary in that there's a parameter called velocity. So basically how hard you hit the quote unquote MIDI keyboard will also be reflected onto the instrument that you're trying to record. So especially for strings, let's say I load a string staccato or spiccato sample, and depending on how hard I hit that key, it will come out as how strongly they're hitting the bow, right? So what I love about this is there are portamento legato applications on these samples. You can, depending on how softly you hit the key, the portamento may be softer or more aggressive or less gradual or more gradual, et cetera, et cetera. And so it's amazing how these sample libraries are growing in intricacy to where you really have full control as to what they're doing and therefore, you know, can make them as humanistic as possible.
Do you ever get to listen to your stuff played by real musicians?
So here's the thing, kind of a side note, but again, as a composer, or rather a film music composer with my own little studio, and I'm a one woman band, right?
Yes.
I have to play the role of multiple. So it's not just composer. I'm also playing orchestrator and copyist. So basically one who takes what was written by the orchestrator and dividing it into parts and into sheet music for live players. I have to play recording artist. I have to play audio engineer. I have to play all these different roles, which is great. I mean, you should learn these things if you plan to go into the trade, but just know that if you're going to do it on your own or if I'm a film music composer, do not assume that I have other people to do it. What's interesting is that in today's world, we have such good string samples that if you just add one layer of a live musician over the other samples, it's very hard to distinguish whether it's a full orchestra or not.
Just as a music fan, I'm just curious. I'm a big fan of the band Radiohead, and they will occasionally have a electronic drum beat in a song, but then their actual human drummer will play over that drum beat, kind of the same rhythm and same beat. And that is because why? It's just filling out the sound a little bit more, or what would you suspect the reason is?
I would definitely think so. I mean, like, for example, if you listen to any Hans Zimmer score, especially in the past 10 years, you have elements of both electronic and live orchestra. And it's simply because there are some frequencies that live players cannot get to. If you want a completely bombastic, radical score that will literally make your bones vibrate, then you need to add those elements electronically. So yeah, I mean, it's just the idea of filling out sound, but also really hitting every frequency in the spectrum to quote unquote move people. And actually quite literally move people.
Very cool. Yeah, so, absolutely.
Yeah.
Say I'm a movie lover. I'm going to the movies tonight. Tell me how to watch this movie and truly appreciate the soundscape.
Listen for themes, because it's just like for the scores that are successful in trying to depict the message or tell the story with the elements of the score, you won't necessarily pick them up because it's happening unconsciously or subconsciously. But if you really want to listen to the score, just train your ears to listen to themes, which usually in intimate settings within the film, you'll hear a theme using more solo instruments, so less instrumentation. And then when you have these non-intimate moments, so very large scapes, you will have then larger orchestrations playing these same themes. But what I like to encourage people to do is just listen for these themes. Think about, what do these themes mean? What are they following? And you will actually learn things about the story that you would not be able to gather without the score.
Thank you again, Trinity, for joining me on the A440 podcast. Why don't you go ahead and plug something? Where can we find you?
Okay, so two things. You can go to my website, www.real, as in movie real, scoring.com, or go to my SoundCloud under Christina Trinity Velez. So just go to SoundCloud.com, enter my name in the search bar, Christina Trinity Velez, and you'll find a bunch of albums of film scores that I've recently finished or other pieces of music that I throw on there.
Awesome. And we'll go ahead and link to those as well on our website and social media feeds. So that's great. Thank you again for joining us. Really enjoyed this conversation. I can't wait to go see another movie here so I can fully appreciate it in a way I haven't before.
Definitely. Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate it. And I've had a lot of fun.
All right. Thanks, Trinity.
Thank you again to Christina Velez-Justo, Trinity, for joining us on the podcast. If you enjoyed the music on today's episode, that is Trinity's, her tribute to fallen soldiers, and we so appreciate her allowing us to use that on today's episode. Check us out on the web, a440pod.com. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter.
Thanks so much for listening.